With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast is sponsored by EarDial, the invisible earplug specially designed for live music. If you go to concerts or festivals, you need to protect your hearing. The sound level at most music venues can cause ringing in your ears and hearing loss. With EarDial, you will still hear the music at full fidelity, but at a safe level. They're very discreet and no one will realise you're wearing them. With the app included, you can know the sound level around you and how long you can stay safely at that level. With their compact case, you can have them in your keychain at all times with you. And from now until the end of September 2019, Guitar Nerds listeners can receive a 20% discount on all EarDial earplugs. Just follow the link in the description of this podcast episode or visit eardial.com/guitar nerds. This week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast is sponsored by Orange Amplifiers and their Tremlord 30 guitar app. A very orange take on a classic, cool 1950s amplifier. It's a 30-watt 112 all-valve guitar combo with 2-foot switchable valve-driven tremolo speeds and 2-spring reverb tank. Everything you need to deliver high-quality, vintage-inspired, boutique-esque tones in the near-indestructible chassis of an Orange amplifier. Harking back to tremolos made famous in the 50s, the 12AX7 valve-powered tremolo oozes versatility and depth. With crystal clear clarity and buckets of headroom, the Orange Tremlord 30 is the latest in Orange's run of meticulously designed pin drop perfect amplifiers. Visit orangeamps.com/tremlord for a detailed overview, sound samples, and links to dealers worldwide. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast, the 234th episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Jay Cross.
Hi, Joe.
And from the Get Offset podcast, Emily Harris.
I'm just so proud to be here.
Yeah, for the first time ever. That's right. The second episode in a row that we're having hosts from other podcasts.
Yeah, and Pacific Northwesterners at that.
Is it? I'm not very good at geography. I'd say it's my worst subject. Actually, we've been doing another series of Friday podcasts where it's that they seem to all be with pedal builders in the States, and they're all in different parts. And I'm finding it really hard to organize times because I don't understand time zones. it's not great. But yes, thank you so much for coming on the podcast with me and Jay.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Great to have you on board. But yes, we've got Jay Cross back as well. You're back from Philadelphia as well, Jay. In fact, you were fresh off of a plane.
Yeah, I got off a plane about... what time is it now? 5 o'clock. I got off a plane about 7 hours ago and had a two-hour drive home from the airport and then realised we didn't have any groceries, so I had to go shopping. And I don't know whether up is down or left is right at the moment. I'm probably going to take a bit of a back seat here, but I will be here both in spirit. Actually, that's it. I'll just be here in spirit.
Yeah, so, that's okay. Yeah. That's fine. Well, thank you for coming on board. Because of course we're Matt Nightless this week. It was too much for Matt doing two
in a row
podcasts.
Goodness
last
no.
week.
How was last week? Obviously, I didn't listen.
Last week was fantastic. It was me, Matt Knight, and Blake from the Tone Mob. And we did.
Did he put you to shame with his professionalism and knowledge?
Blake was very professional, yeah. Actually, one of my favourite things was when... something we actually just did with Emily now, which is before we start recording, we share the show notes, we talk about what we're going to talk about. And I did this last week with Blake, and Blake was like, wow, we've never been this organised. Normally, you know, we're about to start the podcast, and we're like, oh, what should we talk about this week? So I was like, yeah, good. That made me feel professional.
I mean, that's what we used to be like, and then we just sort of got too sick of each other to be able to handle any level of spontaneity. So everything has to be completely scripted.
That is absolutely true.
But why do you think there's only ever two of us on at any one time anymore?
Well, I really like that Mark Packham has actually had to give himself a month off just to kind of to step away from us a little bit,
just to recuperate.
He just likes quitting the podcast every now and again. He thinks it's more dramatic when he comes back.
Yeah.
Let's say, is it like a Fleetwood Mac situation?
Yeah. He loves it. He loves it because, he's the daddy, you know, so he just likes to mix things up by quitting. that's how it is. Anyway, we should talk about some guitar stuff.
Yeah.
And as we've got Emily on here, the first time we've had you on the podcast, we should talk about your guitars and guitars that you like. So we should start with talking about your guitar collection. Now, first of all, I think I discovered Get Offset podcast by seeing Tunatone guitars and seeing you've done a thing with Tunatone guitars, and that was my first discovery of Get Offset. So and of course Tunatone guitars, absolutely. Yeah, an absolutely incredible sort of modern, retro, super over-the-top, simple guitar. And you've got one.
I do. I have the sixth Tunatone ever made, which is kind of stunning. I think a bit of lucky timing on my part. I'd gone up to the Vancouver Guitar Festival on an assignment from the Fretboard Journal. Because I'd seen Layla's stuff on Instagram, I knew she was kind of a new builder, but it looked like she'd had a lot of woodworking experience. So I go up and I'm doing an interview with her, and I, pick up her guitar and I play it. I'm like, how much are these? I'm putting an order in today. Like, let me figure out how to get you that deposit. so it was pretty quick. Because man, she knows how to, like, just the little details and things. It's amazing. Like, if you look at the back of the neck, and that's all hand carved.
Yeah.
And a lot of the brass, the bridge.
The bridge is incredible because the bridge is like a one piece. It's one piece of brass that drops in perfectly, seamlessly into the body, and then the adjustment is on the back for the bridge.
It's on the back. It's for the height, and I've adjusted it a few times, and it's so easy. To do, but it's just like an acoustic bridge, and which makes sense because she learned from Dion James, and he's an acclaimed acoustic builder.
Of course, yeah. And it's so funny because those Tunatone guitars, they look so simple. They look like there's not much to them, you know, when you see photos, but actually up close, it seems to be that there's tons of attention to detail on the instruments.
Yes, just truly a lot of attention to detail. At one point, Layla told me which specific guitar she was most inspired by, but it was very much the old guitars from the 60s that were being made in Japan and stuff like that. And she's taken that kind of aesthetic, not just in her design, but in her building process. So back then, they were kind of limited by the resources that they had. So she tries to limit herself to kind of local resources, locally sourcing parts wherever possible, and really focuses on sustainable woods.
Wow, that's super cool. And of course she only does, so you got the, what's the name of the model?
It's the Teeny Tuna.
The Teeny Tuna, that's it. Because it's the Teeny Tuna and the Baratuna. Those are the two essentially.
Oh, Baratuna, yeah.
Which I would definitely get. And you, of course, got... It's a satin finish, right?
Mm-hmm. So I got a satin finish. She sends them out to Vancouver guitar finishing for that part.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
Is that because she doesn't have the facilities to do that within the workshop? Because, I mean, the pictures that she puts up on Instagram, it all... Like, her workshop looks like suspiciously clean. And like deceptively kind of, you know, I've been to a bunch of kind of, you know, large guitar factories and stuff, and there's just stuff everywhere. But whenever she puts up pictures of hers, it's like everything's so immaculately put together and like very tidy. And I guess, you know, having kind of a finishing booth would kind of ruin that a little bit, so
I'm sure it's just for the photos, but she tells me that they keep a pretty strict cleaning schedule.
Yeah,
she shares that shop with two other people,
and they're both acoustic.
Adam Turley and Dion James.
Right. Yeah. Of course. And that the Teeny Tuner just has one pickup, kind of neck position. It's not quite neck position, but sort of kind of neck position.
Yeah, I'd call it neck position. It's a Roadhouse single coil, but it's in the humbucker routing. It's a split blade single coil, so the top three are wound separately from the bottom three. And I don't know if it's just my brain that's thinking that's bucks a little bit of the hum, but it's not a noisy guitar at all. Like I'm so impressed by it, just constantly every time I play it.
It's an unusual thing as well, because if you get one pickup guitar, it's almost, you know, it's 99% of the time it's going to be a bridge mounted pickup.
Exactly.
So how do you find sort of the lack of versatility by having just a neck pickup?
I don't really find any lack of versatility. It's just, it's kind of like how a clean amp is a great platform for a lot of other things. It kind of reminds me of that. Like it can bite and it can get mean and nasty, especially if I put the right effects behind it. But for what I play, which is I play everything from, it really depends on who books me. I play everything from country to indie pop to butt rock and Americana kind of stuff, and like that guitar, the only reason I wouldn't play that guitar is if I needed a vibrato system.
Right. Okay. Oh, that's so it's super versatile. I mean, we all love single pickup guitars anyway. It's just I don't think I'd ever think of doing that. I don't think I'd ever, if I only had to have one pickup, I'd want to have the bridge pickup rather than the neck.
I rarely use the bridge pickup on a guitar. I am very much neck middle kind of gal. So cool. It kind of worked really well for me. And also it weighs like 6 pounds.
Really?
Wow, really?
Yeah, that's cool. That's kind of what you want. That's kind of what I've got so into like SGs recently, and I'm loving sort of the throw around lack of weight that comes with that. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
But you get that from, that's kind of a thing, isn't it? Of like those old, especially sort of Japanese sort of 70s guitars. That's kind of the thing, that sort of Taisco. Everything was very lightweight and very throw around, and that's kind of the appeal of these sort of certainly the old 70s Japanese guitars, where they were all a bit more, they were cheaper, they were the sort of things that you could mod mm-hmm. or do whatever you want with, and you could throw it around. And I think having that sort of lightweight thing, you know, it feels like that to me.
Yeah, I mean, and I like I'm not the smallest lady in the world, but I'm a little bit smaller. So it's a smaller guitar. It's lighter weight because I just don't have that strength. But also, like, I don't know why anybody would want to play a 10-pound guitar, like, or 12-pound guitar, something that's very, very heavy. Like, and I think about the way I was playing a lot of gigs this summer. It was, I would go in to the venue at noon. I'd have the set list the night before. I'd run through the charts with the band, and then we'd play two shows that night. We'd be done at, like, 11:30. Like, I needed a guitar that I could wear for, you know, 12 hours divided.
Wow.
Sure. Yeah, that's kind of the problem with anything heavyweight. Like when there was a point in time where Juan Alderet was playing I think it was an old Ibanez Roadster bass, and it was a sort of 10-pound ash thing, and that's when he started getting the double-shouldered straps
yeah.
that go over. I kind of think they look cool. I kind of think I would like to do that, but then I would also like to be able to lift my guitar at some point in the air, and you can't do that with a double shoulder one, so that'd be a problem. Now, one of the other guitars you've got, actually probably your most recent acquisition, you put out it as a video review, which is something that you're now doing with Get Offset. You've started your own YouTube video reviews, and the guitar that you've led that with, I guess, is the Squire Classic Vibe Series
Starcaster.
There we go.
Yeah.
Got there in the end.
Oh, really? You got one?
Yeah, I got one. I don't know if the store kind of jumped the gun on selling them because I haven't seen like any of them out in the wild. Mm-hmm. But I messaged him like, is this in stock? Like, will this ship tomorrow? They're like, yeah. So Reverb had their like Labor Day sale, and I had like a gift card. So I think I spent like $250 on it.
Nice.
How could I say no? But the thing is, I needed a guitar I could leave in my practice space and not be like gutted if something happened to it.
Yeah.
And now I've fallen in love with this friggin' Starcaster. So
I can't believe how good it looks. I can't
believe
how
it looks so good.
The It looks like a guitar that should be way, way more money. Just aesthetically, and especially you went for the one. What's the finish? It's like a brown
walnut
finish.
Yeah.
Oh, it looks incredible because it's so glossy as well. It was
so
such a...
glossy. No imperfections that I could see in the finish. No weird spacing with the nut or anything like that. Like the Players series or whatever. I know that factory in Mexico had some issues with just like a quality control. This is a really nice guitar, stays in tune really well. I think the pickups take dirt especially well. They're fine clean, but I think when I put my hot cake on, my Crowther hot cake, I think it just sounds so good. And again, it's maybe 7 or 8 pounds.
Really? Is it? Oh, I always thought StarCasters was super heavy.
Yeah, I think the center block must be balsa wood or something lightweight, because normally that's like where the weight I would think would come from on a semi-hollow guitar. There's not Bigsby or anything, like there's no major hardware on there. It's just kind of like a Gibson-esque stop tail piece.
Yeah, well, definitely, certainly when the Mexican was it Player Series, Jake? No, what was the
Player Series?
The old StarCaster.
Yeah, the Fender StarCasters.
Were they in the Modern Player or were they in the...
Modern Player, yeah,
They might
yeah,
have been the
it.
Pawn Shop.
No, it's definitely Modern Player because it came out alongside the other hollow body Fender. What's it
the
called?
The Coronado.
Coronado.
Yeah, I think it was Modern Player. Yeah, because there was some weird Pawn Shop stuff that came out around the same time, like the Offset Special.
I have one of those.
Oh, do you?
I have the pink one.
You got it in pink. Awesome. That guitar was so bloody weird. Like we were still working at a shop when that came out, and I just didn't understand what it was. I didn't understand what it was, what the point was. Like, I didn't understand what you were supposed to do with it or where it came from, but it was wicked. Absolutely fantastic. So,
it's such a cool guitar. It's so comfortable. It's got those weird like humbuckers in it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, I can't remember how that they're sort of large like white humbuckers, but with the chrome pole pieces in them. They look odd.
It's a stacked humbucker, so like if you were to take those out of that guitar and put them in another guitar, you'd have to route more depth.
Right.
But that's how that worked. I ended up switching them out for my buddy Curtis Lamberton from Lambertone Pickups. He makes an actual like PAF style humbucker in a Jazzmaster routing. So I swapped those out. But I liked them just fine. I just wanted something
just mix
different.
It up. Yeah. Yeah, really.
So let's talk about the
really
sorry.
No, it's
yeah,
fine.
Sorry. Let's talk about the rest of your collection then. So we've got the Offset Special, the StarCaster.
Yes.
And the Tunitone Teeny Tuner. We're kind of following quite a similar angle of of sort of retro guitars here.
Yeah, I have two Jazzmasters. I think it was 2016 Fender came out with that Magnificent 7 line. So I have the white Jazzmaster with the reduced controls and a Bigsby.
And a Bigsby, yeah, okay.
I love that thing. Yeah. It's got a nice satin finish on the neck. It was the first guitar I've ever had that had a satin finish on the neck. I was like, I don't know if I can go back to glossy finishes on necks.
I see. Really? I feel the same. Joe, you really like the gloss finish, don't you?
I love glossy stuff, but I really like my old stuff to be old stuff. Like it, I need to have all the imperfections. The bridge needs to not work properly as well.
Oh.
Like, I like all those things. But yeah, I understand the appeal of a satin neck. I just, you know, Jimi Hendrix didn't need a satin neck.
Oh well, you know.
Yeah. Well, I'm
he didn't
not
need
Jimmy...
Google either, but we do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And also, I'm not Jimi Hendrix, so
yeah,
like,
neither am I.
I need all the help I can get. Like,
so what was the other Jazzmaster you got? So you got that one, what was the reduced controls? Is this the same as the?
It just doesn't have the rhythm circuit.
The Johnny Marr, right? Okay.
Yeah, and then I have the 62 AVRI Jazzmaster in black, and I'm sorry to tell you, I swapped out the bridge for a Mastery.
Oh yeah, nice.
That is super cool. Yeah, yeah. Fidelity Guitars over in the UK, who we bang on about all the time, essentially use Mastery bridges on everything, and I didn't care about. Bridges like that until I played Fidelity guitars, and obviously yes, Mastery bridges are
I never thought about bridges until I got that 62 AVRI, and I'm like, well, I'm kind of tired of the buzzing and the strings jumping. And it's not, I'm not a hard player, so I don't really understand why that was happening. But the mastery makes a big difference. The only thing about the mastery is that it does sync sometimes, so you got to keep that Allen wrench handy.
Yeah, those were, I mean, the problem with all of those 62 reissues, well, all of those American Vintage reissues was they were proper, like, vintage correct. So the 62 mm-hmm. and the 65 was the same. Just like, basically, again, when I was working in a shop, whenever anyone bought one of those, we always had Mustang bridges handy to just be like, do you want me to swap this out for you now? Because you will want to do it eventually. And, and it would, you know, it's... I've never really understood that kind of classic 60s Jazzmaster Jaguar bridge. I don't understand kind of who really uses it. I'm sure that there will be people who will write in and say, you're an idiot, which is fine. I am an idiot.
I mean, but I'm sure it was great when they shipped with 12s and the G-strings wound.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, just a little bit more pressure on there. Just keep a little bit more tension, keeping everything down. But
just a little bit more pressure.
Just a little bit, yeah. But like, I just in this day and age, you know, they're vintage correct. It is what it is. I understand it, but yeah, I mean, whenever I sold one of those, we always recommend you swap it out for a Mustang bridge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's the easy swap.
Yeah.
And affordable. Economical.
Absolutely. Also, the shop that we worked in weren't a mastery dealer, so we didn't have much choice.
Yeah.
So,
is there any? Are there any guitars that you own that aren't offsets?
Well, the Tunatone's not an offset.
Well, I guess the Tunatone isn't. Yeah.
I have no. I think that the tenor guitars are both offsets.
The tenor guitars.
Yeah, I have two tenor guitars by Eastwood, the Warren Ellis and the Astrojet.
Yes, the Warren Ellis Eastwood is a fantastic little tenor guitar. What a cool thing to have a Mustang, but you know, on right. What finish did he go for?
They sent me Cherry.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Cool. With the black scratch plate on the Cherry one.
Yeah, which I'm really glad they sent me the Cherry because it's really beautiful. I did some videos for them a while back, and I'm going to do a little bit more content for them coming up. But I did some tutorials about, you know, how to play. Here's five songs for all skill levels that you can learn on a tenor guitar. So.
Oh, that's cool.
That's cool.
Yeah,
that's
that
cool.
Was
obviously
fun.
Warren Ellis just uses it as a noise machine, essentially. But it's but tenor guitars are a fantastic instrument for just making weird. They're a fantastic platform to just run a ton of pedals through as well. I mean, I would have no idea how to play one conventionally. I'll have to actually watch your
just,
videos on.
It's
on
just tenor. It's just the top three, the top four strings on a guitar, though, isn't it? Like standard tuning.
It depends on who you talk to. You can tune it any way you like. I have one tuned like the top four strings on a guitar, and I have one that's tuned in fifths, like a mandolin, like an octave mandolin.
Yes. Okay.
And there are people who will tell you if it's not tuned in fifths, it's not a tenor guitar, and they're rude people, and no one should ever listen to them.
Because
that's a hill I will die on.
I think that was my first introduction to them was the Epiphone Mando Bird. Because they were, was it the Mando Bird or Mando Bird? I'm sure that's what it was tuned like that. But again, we just got everyone to tune it like a standard guitar, and they were really popular. I don't know why they discontinued those. It was really weird. Because I mean, I guess maybe everyone who wanted one bought one, and then they didn't have any left. Because I mean, it's quite an esoteric tenor, you know, that in a Explorer shape, you know, it's pretty full on.
That's pretty cool. I kind of want one now, but
not Explorer. Sorry, Firebird, of course.
Firebird, yeah. Fender have thrown their hat Firebirds. Into the tenor guitar ring this year as well, Jay.
Yeah.
So it's part of the alternate reality or parallel universe.
Yeah.
Alternate reality. Yeah, it's part of the alternate reality series. There's the tenor guitars there. I got to spend about 5 minutes with them at NAMM, and that was literally it. And they're really weird. They're really, really weird. But they just look like a proper Telecaster. They're wicked. They're very, very cool. But yeah,
aren't they a chunk of money? They're quite premium price point.
No,
right?
They're like $500.
Yeah, like 400
quid. Oh,
yeah.
Fine.
It's not crazy money.
No, I think they're cheaper than the Eastwoods.
Really? Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess, yeah, the Eastwoods were... Because the Eastwood added a bass this year as well, to a proper four-string
bass. The Warren Ellis bass.
I really
liked
it.
It's so little and cute. I liked that a lot. I liked it almost more than the Fender Mustang basses, well, though those are cheaper, so I...
Yeah, well, that was kind of the thing. I was like, wow, I would definitely, I would get one of these Eastwood Warren, the sort of Warren Ellis bass thing, because it's really cool. But I would get it because I like Mustang basses, and because the price point ended up being slightly more than Fender were actually making Mustangs for.
Yep. Yeah, that's kind of a weird thing on their end.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll go into their clearance sometime. But no, I desperately want to try the Fender Tenor. Desperately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they cool. are very, very cool. They were pretty limited, I think. I can't remember exactly, to be honest with you. I think all of that alternate reality stuff was all fairly limited, because I know that loads of people wanted the Meteoras. Those tenors have been super popular, super cool.
So we've got in your collection so far, we've got two tenors, two jazz masters, the Tunitone,
the
Offset Special, and the Starcaster.
Yeah, I have now my non-offsets, I have a Gibson ES-135.
Oh, that's very cool. That's
very
cool.
Yeah, I got that
cool.
one in high school. Yeah. I got that one in high school, and I wish I should play it more than I do. And then I have a, Harley Benton, their version of like the Prince Telecaster. And I, put a more Prince-esque scratch plate on it. I did a water slide decal that looks more like the traditional, Mad Cat kind of logo and stuff. So that was the first guitar I put some work in on.
Oh, that's cool.
And it weighs so much. And it sounds pretty good for like $185 shipped to America.
Yeah. I was going to say, so presumably you had to buy that from Thomann and have it shipped, because...
It was like $85 shipping, maybe.
Okay, that doesn't actually seem too bad, to be honest with you.
No, I mean, I shipped a guitar to Canada to a friend this year, and I paid $100 to ship it to him, so...
You could have just driven, mate.
He's in Ontario, which is on the other side.
Sunny over the border, isn't it? It's fine.
No, it's just like 10 hours into Canada,
yeah,
and like 36 hours. 36 hours
round trip.
I think y'all forget how big America is.
So what's your favorite guitar in your guitar collection?
Tunitone.
Really? Right. Mm-hmm, straight up.
Mm-hmm. Oh. I'm just going to pick it up every time.
When did you buy that? You've owned that for what, a year?
I ordered it about a year ago. I got it back in June.
Right. Okay. Oh, that's very cool. That's very cool. So the 135, an ES-135 is incredibly rare. Like, I never see 135s around. I can't even remember.
That's because they discontinued them and started making the 137.
Right.
Something like that.
Yeah, I can't even remember us ever having a 135 in the shop. In the entire time I was there.
No, I think we had like 275s and 137s. I can't remember the last time that they... I mean, I'm sure somewhere the 135 is still in the catalogue. But, you know, whether they actually ever make them is another thing. So that... Because that's just... That's like the one...
It's the 175 that's
body
skinny.
Shape. That's like thinner, right? Is that right?
Yeah, it's just super thin, but it's a 175. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're very cool. Very, very cool guitars.
Yeah.
How old is it?
Block. It's early 2000s. It was made in the Memphis factory. I need to look up the year, because I need to do another accounting of my guitars with the serial numbers and everything.
Right. That's cool.
Yeah, I really need to do that. I was thinking that the other day. There's so much stuff
isn't
here.
Isn't that like
and
a
week-long
job for you?
Yeah, at the least, yeah. But yeah, I will eventually do that. I realized, you know, that I haven't updated mine in ages, and so I've got like there's stuff on. I'm paying insurance on guitars I don't own anymore. But I really need to. Yeah. I really need to switch that up. So what about the rest of your rig?
Unless there are any other guitars, you jump into that, there was one other thing that I wanted to ask you, Emily. What about the Equits?
Oh, the Ainsley by Kevin Equitz. Yeah. So he and I designed that together.
Yes. Have you got one of those?
No, there's only the one prototype, and that's sort of making the rounds.
Right.
I know Molly Miller from Jason Mraz's band had it for a while, and I think she's loaned it now to somebody else. But that's when that makes it back to Kevin, he's going to make some adjustments and ship it back to me for another round of, videos and et cetera.
I mean,
so I don't know about this guitar.
Yeah, I think it's a really good story, if you don't mind kind of elaborating on how it all came about.
Yeah, I don't know how you know about this, but neat. I feel like there was like one week in a bunch of gear groups where a bunch of dudes were talking about like what would be the best guitar for a woman, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, they were thinking about it. And I was kind of just giving my thoughts on, you know, what I think would work well for, you know, a lot of women. Things like, maybe a smaller body shape. I think the offset shapes are more comfortable. Something that doesn't have a big horn at the top that, you know, impedes your body. Things like that. So then Kevin reached out to me and he'd been thinking about it because he feels like he didn't want to make a guitar for women, but he wanted to make a guitar that would be maybe more comfortable for everybody. So sort of a more inclusive type of design. I mean, he has a daughter who has just started playing bass when we first started talking, and he was pretty aghast at the lack of options for her. So he and I just kind of were brainstorming, talking, figuring things out, came up with a design. He built it really quickly, and he sent it my way last winter for a few months, and it's a dream. It's dreamy. Like, I don't know what else to say about it. It's an offset, obviously. Has pretty good fret access, which I like, and is pretty lightweight, has a nice little tummy cut, a good arm relief, and it's just a really comfortable guitar. I think anybody would like it. It's not too small, so I don't think that even a bigger guy would feel like it was a toy.
What scale length was it?
That's Fender scale.
Okay.
Was that 25 and a half? Yeah. I mean, the thing about guitar scales is I think nut width is more important when it comes to smaller hands. That's kind of my take on it. And from a lot of the other women I've talked to with small hands, will tell you the same thing. Like, a shorter nut width is kind of more important than a shorter scale.
That's really interesting, right, actually, because I think, yeah, you do tend to find just people adjusting the scale length for people who may, you know, traditionally be smaller. Like, even like you kind of look at like kids' guitars, it's always, oh yeah, we'll just make it shorter, like kind of completely ignoring the fact that as soon as you reduce the scale length beyond a certain point, the guitar becomes like borderline unplayable, you know, just for the sake of it.
Especially if you're not shrinking it the other way also.
Yeah, absolutely.
This week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast is sponsored by Celestion and their brand new Ruby Alnico guitar speaker. Purpose built to create rich, beautiful vintage tones, the Ruby oozes a richly musical warmth with mellow highs and a smooth, sophisticated mid-range that always seems to sound just right. The classic Alnico speaker shape and lush, deep red colour ensures Ruby really looks the part in your cab and guarantees that no one could possibly mistake this remarkable new guitar speaker's family history. Check out Celestion's new Ruby at retailers including Lean Business in the UK, Tube Amp Doctor in Germany, Algam in France, Eco Music in Italy, Ebelaud in Spain, plus Gear for Music, Toman, and The Backshop. And in the USA, you can buy through retailers like Sweetwater, Musicians Friends, AMS, Parts Express, Loudspeakers Plus, and of course Amazon. And for more details, check out Celestion.com.
So no, that's really cool. I mean, I heard the podcast you did with Adam on the Let Him Hear podcast last year.
I love Adam.
Yeah, he's really cool. In fact, because he's in PA, and I was only like an hour or so from him last week, and I really wanted to try and hook up with him, but I just didn't end up having the time. So, I think the last three times I've been in PA, I've been like, oh yeah, we'll hook up, and then just haven't been able to. So.
Yeah.
So I didn't even reach out this time because I knew that I wouldn't be able to. So, but yeah, because I made a point of going and checking out the Equit stuff at NAMM, and I had a go on a couple of his guitars, and because obviously there's no distribution for them over here, and I thought they were fantastic, absolutely fantastic. I really like the bass that he had as well.
Oh yeah, that's cool. I think
can't remember the name of. But
what was the bass? Because I don't actually know this brand, so any description is helpful.
So Equits guitar, Equits. I don't know how he pronounces it.
I say Equits. EQUIT something Z.
And it's the, which one is it? Oh, it's not on his website anymore, the bass. But the bass was really cool. I think you'd be really into these guitars, Joe. There's three models on the site at the moment: the Ashford, the Devera, and the Rayburn. And they're all like pretty different. The Rayburn is probably the most kind of guitar nerds friendly. And so the other two are probably more what you'll like, Joe. You know, being the contrarian that you are. but the Rayburn.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I think I tried the Rayburn while I was at NAMM. I can't remember now, to be honest with you. But yeah, I got a chance to have a chat with Kevin, and he's a really, really nice guy. The guitars are fantastic, and yeah, I really hope that someone picks them up over here so that they just become a little bit more visible to people in Europe.
Yeah, I don't know how many, if any, of his are in shops. I think he does all.
It's all custom
order
made.
Work.
Right. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And he's got quite the wait list,
yeah,
so good for him.
Totally, yeah. So it's definitely someone you should check out, Joe, because they're proper, proper cool. And
I'm looking at the website now. They're absolutely fantastic. Like, I love the slightly offset body shape on the... I am actually really into the Rayburn. That's definitely the most guitar nerds. And the most in line with kind of the guitars that we've been talking about on this podcast. Yeah. I love that sort of that sort of thin line... type scratch plate that it's got. It looks fantastic in a one pickup version, because it means the plate just kind of moves like shapes around the pickup without sort of having anything cut into it. I'm loving the offset sort of dot inlays on there, the cool sort of brass saddle bridge. They look fantastic.
They really do. And the bass that I tried was like very similar to the Rayburn, but but it had like a Gretsch style pickup, like a TV Jones style pickup. It's like single TV Jones style pickup in the bridge.
Absolutely. All about that.
Yeah, it's
loving
really
the back
cool.
of the back of the neck on some of the pictures on the website's really interesting.
With the pinstriping.
Like a pinstripe and then the sort of in this instance, a black finish to the back of the headstock, which I assume mimics the
really
black
cool.
scratch plate on the front. Oh, that's lovely attention to detail. I'm very, very into this. This is cool. sort of retro classic looking, but still sort of with some modern sensibilities. It kind of reminds me of the new Harmony stuff that's that's coming out. And certainly I guess I'm thinking that because one of the models on the Equits website is like a champagne gold finish, and that's mm-hmm. that seems to be the cornerstone of the new Harmony guitars finish, starting at $2,100, which is not a lot of money for a
Kevin's
custom-built guitar.
I'm always shocked at how much more affordable his are than you would think.
That's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah,
they look awesome. Outside of your you know, very good. That's a really high quality sort of guitar collection of pretty much all kind of similar vein guitars than the guitars that me and Jay and Mark and Matt are interested in, which is of course, you know, classic looking retro style guitars. Outside of that, what are you using at the moment amplifier wise to supplement your taste?
I have a Silvertone 1472 that picked up a little
back.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Emerald City Guitars out here had me down to do their Friends Pick Friday video, and I picked that amp, and then I need to buy it. I knew I had a little bit of credit with them still for something else, and I'm like, give me. I need it. Like, we have to take a video of it first, Emily. Nice. And then I have a Roland JC40.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, so those are my two amps.
So similarly sort of spanky, clean platform amplifiers, I guess.
Mm-hmm. The Silvertone breaks up really nicely and has a really, really tasteful built-in tremolo. Yeah, especially if you plug it into the microphone output, it breaks up really early, which is really cool.
So listener, if you haven't seen a Silvertone 1472, they are they're very unusual looking amplifiers. They essentially look like old TV sets.
Yes.
With all the controls down one side rather than being sort of along the top or top mounted in any way. They're all mm-hmm. With sort of staggered pots sort of diagonally placed. It's just such a novel take on a guitar amp. They look fantastic. They are very cool. I don't know what the speaker is in a 1472. Is it just like a 10-inch?
I don't know.
No, I'm not sure. I just, you know, they are super cool. And yeah, what a cool amplifier to get.
It is really cool. The JC40 is nice too. It's a little better to travel with. I love the Silvertone because it weighs nothing. But sometimes there's been once or twice I took it to a gig, plugged it in, and it was like, oh crap, and I had to unplug it, wait for it to cool down, take all the tubes out, plug them back in. Something got knocked loose somewhere. But that's only happened once. And
yeah, I think the problem is that because of the way that they mount the controls in the 1472, the same problem that the old Fender Bassmans had, where all the valves were mounted upside down, so they had sort of gravity working against them, you know, for them to loosen up rather than them being placed in something in an ordinary amp. On the 1472, it's the same thing, but everything's side. All the valves are in the side, so that it's not going to help.
No, try to put it in the car face down, like on a blanket or something, and it helps a little bit, but just now before the show, it's just like, let's just wiggle everything before let's get it right.
I can't imagine ever wanting to rely on a 1472.
Oh, hell no.
The jazz chorus seems like a much smarter choice for that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's a touring musician's choice.
Sure.
More so. But so that's what I take to the gigs mostly. I mean, it's lightweight enough. I can do it myself. Like, I can get my pedal board in one hand, my guitar on my back, my amp in one hand. I gotta take a break every 20 steps and like switch hands, but I can do it.
Right. And okay, speaking of the pedal board, what are you doing? So it's, first of all, we've established it's a pedal board that you can carry with one hand, which doesn't sound like much of a pedal board.
It depends on the gig. I played a gig on Thursday, and I just needed my tuner fuzz, the Mount Hood fuzz pedal by Spruce FX. That was our signature fuzz pedal. The Hot Cake by Crowther, Hummingbird V4 tremolo, and then the Prelude by Quiet Theory. So for like a little indie pop, simple rock kind of setup, that worked. My My pour that I dick around with at home is a Matthews Chemist. So that is octave, chorus, and phaser. So I have it to the octave setting and the chorus setting. So I can get an octave down if I want to do like a bass thing on a loop. Right. That goes into the Mount Hood Fuzz. That goes into the Ohm by Mezzo Effects. That goes into right now the Somersault by Caroline Effects. That goes into the Discman by Kyle and Bread, which is a glitchy stutter delay, which is super cool. That goes into the Grazer by Dwarfcraft, into the Benford 6100 by Pelican Noise Works, into the PN2 Tremolo by Boss, into the Avalanche Run V1 by Earthquaker, into a looper.
Crikey, there is a lot going on there. And no duplicate brands, if I wasn't mistaken there.
Oh God, no.
Yeah, that sounds like a suitably more nerdy sort of home setup. You're getting on for our sort of co-host Matt Knight's ungiggable rig.
Actually, I've gotten gigs with it. It's the best part.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Studio gigs.
Right. Yeah. Of course. Standard. Yeah. Awesome. Okay. So now we've established kind of a your gear tastes, which are relatively in line with the rest of ours. We should delve into a big barrel of news. So first up on the news, before I actually do any news items, I first of all have to point out a couple of things. Unfortunately, Emily, this won't apply to anyone on your side of the pond, but we are doing 20% off the UK Guitar Show with Guitar Nerds at the moment. So you can go to www.ukguitarshow.com. I don't know, why did I say www.
http
://
that's it. Yeah, fine. Anyway, you can go onto their website and type like Guitar Nerds 20 somewhere. You get 20% off, whatever. Yeah, come to the UK Guitar Show. It's gonna be great. Me, you're gonna be there, Jay. You and Matt are doing the Saturday and me and Mark are doing the Sunday. Yeah, as we can't all bear to be in the same place at the same time anymore.
Yeah, well, you know, that's just the way things are nowadays. Yeah,
that's how it works.
I'm gonna be going on Saturday and having a little look around.
Do you know if you're especially looking forward to seeing anything in particular?
I'm looking forward to seeing my friend Matt Knight, who I haven't seen for about a year and a half. That should be really good. To be honest with you, I haven't even really looked to see who's doing it. I just know it was pretty good last year. And I just suspect it will be another good one. I mean, Fender is doing something there, so you know there'll be a load of stuff on display, which will be fun. I was just killing time while I look at the exhibitor list.
Clearly hear that you were doing that. Now they've sandwiched it this year with the bass show, which actually I'm quite excited about.
Sounds rubbish.
Just because it's just
a room with a single P bass in it.
Like. Well, here's the problem. See, at the guitar show, there tends to be sort of a lot of brands that you'd expect. And at the bass show, you get all these weird luthiers from the sort of various corners of the world bringing these like odd sort of wood guitars that look like they've been carved out of some wood.
Okay, you know. Good.
They look weird. They look unusual. There's always something weird that you've never seen before that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to seeing that. Actually, Stonefield Basses are going to be there with their first fretless bass.
Okay.
Where they've changed their tuning system again. Do you remember the Stonefield Basses had they had the Tom Stanley bridge tuners? So you had like a, you know, like what you get on like a headless status bass or things like that. So you've got the little round things on the bridge that you're tuning with. Now, the whole thing with Stonefield is that they like wood and they don't like metal, and that's why their bridges were all made out of wood and it was only the tuning system that was made out of metal. So now on their fretless, they've worked a tuning system that's entirely wood. So they've gone back to a conventional tuning system on the headstock, but they are giant wooden pegs, but they're kind of like Firebird placement, so you know when they come out the
back of it. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, but they look like big old clothes pegs.
Huh.
It's really weird. Yeah, yeah. So it's it looks really unusual. But I'm looking forward to checking out this sort of their whole thing with the bass is it's all wood other than the frets. You know, but I wonder if you could do wooden frets. Maybe that's the next thing.
Oh, I think how often would you have to replace those?
You know, ebony is hardwood. Yeah, probably often. Anyway. Anyway, we should do some news. So Mataverse, a company that we have a lot of time for on the Guitar Nerds podcast, they have just introduced a new pedal called the Tremstortion. Now, I shared this pedal on the Guitar Nerds Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/Guitar Nerds Forum. And I thought this pedal was awesome. So it is exactly what you think from a pedal called the Tremstortion. It is a tremolo and a distortion in one box. But it has a massive range of waveforms, which means you can get anything from sort of a traditional sounding. You can do like a trad sounding tubey tremolo with like a nice little bit of grit there and get kind of a vintage sound. But at the other end of that, you can do like a saw tremolo with sort of the distortion max, and you can choose which way you're running those two pedals via a little toggle. So you can choose whether you're running, you know, the distortion into the tremolo or the tremolo into the distortion. And it just means that you can create these incredible sort of pulsing, like dancey, synthy tones,
mm-hmm.
all with this, you know, with something that essentially has no synthesizer bit in it, but it just makes incredibly cool synth tones. I think it's a wicked pedal.
It seems suspiciously conservative for Mataverse, I have to say. You know, there's no kind of like destructive time bomb circuit in there where after you've been using it for more than like five seconds, it just turns off, which is kind of what I expect from a Mataverse pedal. You know, he's made what sounds like a very usable pedal, which doesn't sound like a Mataverse thing to do. So I'm very excited to see this.
I mean, it sounds conservative, right? Because it's a tremolo and a distortion, and those two effects are, you know, sound very normal. It really doesn't sound, when you hear the pedal, it doesn't sound conventional at all. It can do, but it just it can go off on such a complete tangent. And you know, the other side is, of course, I guess you could just, you know, if you have a tremolo and a distortion on your board, you could you can create these sounds separately. But I'm really into this, and like another great pedal from Mataverse as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really like that demo you did, especially when you turn it up to like 4 or 5 o'clock and it gets into those weirder waveforms.
Yeah.
I think that's a really cool pedal. And now I'm like, oh, great, I need another tremolo pedal.
Yeah. Oh, wait, have you got one, Joe?
No, sorry, not that I did, that Mataverse did.
Gotcha. Yes,
right. Sorry, I'm sorry, the one that you posted.
That they
yes.
did, yeah, that I posted, yeah.
Sorry, I thought you were holding out on me.
I mean, I am absolutely.
I've got you blocked on all the social channels, so like, I don't see if you've actually done anything like that, so.
Sure, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. No, I mean, I'm absolutely going to get one, because as usual with all the Mataverse stuff, like, they're never too much money.
No.
And they're like a really cool little boutique you know, company. I love that, like, they have a whole sort of charity element of their business as well. Sort of parts of the funds from each pedal go towards a charity. I think they're very cool. I actually love the presentation of the pedals. I love the amount of cool, weird stuff you get when you buy one of their pedals, like stickers, plectrums, weird little things like that that come in the box. It's just they're just a cracking little company.
And the Instagram demo videos are always fantastic, because he puts it in front of like a green screen and just projects like space images and like static and just chaos in the background. It's really cool.
It's a great way of originally demoing pedals, you know, when you're just looking at some hands moving a pedal, and, you know, there are a load of those sorts of things kicking around.
Mm-hmm.
Now, speaking of,
good.
You're so bad at segues.
Doesn't matter. They don't need to be a segue every time.
Okay. All right. Okay, Jay Cross, I want to talk about Supro amplifiers. Let's talk about Supro amplifiers.
Okay, I didn't know we were going to do that, so I haven't got that one open.
Okay.
Supro!
So, Supro have unveiled the Blues King 8, which...
Oh, that's handsome.
Yeah, so, the Blues King 8 is They released the Blues King amp a little while ago, and it's the coolest looking thing ever. I'm very into cool looking amps. The bulk of it is Tolex. I don't know, listener, if that makes any sense if you haven't seen it, but the bulk of the front of it is Tolex, and then the grill is just this tiny little space around, obviously, where the speaker is. It's very, very cool.
It looks very much like a kind of 60s accordion. Sorry, not accordion, a 60s harmonica amp. That kind of, just like super retro, really compact. It looks incredible, really incredible. Like, it doesn't look like, as far as I can remember, any of the other Supro amps.
No, unless not at all.
Is there a, Joe, you said there was another Blues King, or is there a Blues King? Yeah, there was 12 or something.
Yeah, it was something like that. Blues King 10 or 12. They certainly reintroduced them. They introduced them at the last NAMM, this sort of new look and this range. But yeah, I mean, they look fantastic. This one's super simple. You know, you're looking at just a little 8-inch speaker, and I think it's just volume, master tone, I think it's gain, master tone, and a master volume on this as well as just having like a single tube preamp and a single tube power amp. I just love it. It looks like a cool, compact, probably, you know, sort of spanky, gainy, cool little amplifier that is in a convenient carryable package. It's very small. It's kind of like Fender Champ sized, I guess.
I think it looks smaller in the picture.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, yeah. I guess a traditional Fender Champ. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah, like a 57 and Champ type thing.
And they're going to be retailing these for like $299 US dollars.
Really? Wow, that is very reasonable.
I know. That's why I don't think there's a good reason not to get one of these. If you like these cool retro classic style amplifiers, but you think maybe you want something that's a bit more general purpose, you know, for shows and things like that. If you just want to mess around with something that looks incredible at home, then I think for $299, I can't think of anything that looks as cool as this. Mm-hmm. It's very, very fun, super retro, awesome guitar. Right, let's move on with a couple of other things. Let's talk about the Slash Double Neck.
Oh yeah, look at that thing. It's like a black SG, and the top neck's a 12 string, and the bottom neck's a 6 string. Oh god, it looks so weird.
Yeah, the EDS 1275, which has been in and out of production by Gibson for years. They released like an Epiphone version of this a little while ago.
Oh, they did.
Yeah, which was relatively more affordable. I think it was still over £1,000, but it was still like, you know, this is the coolest. This is the Jimmy Page style. You know, double neck. This is who I can't think of ever seeing Slash use this. You know, this double neck. But the double neck SG style guitar is surely like the coolest double neck there is. And now, to add to the sort of massive range of Slash guitars, they've put out another one.
Mm-hmm.
But
So it's got. I'm trying. Oh, only 125 will be sold worldwide. Each hand signed and numbered by Slash himself.
Yeah,
they are really putting him to work as the brand ambassador. Job title
with
that—that
is, yeah, he is the official brand ambassador, isn't he? But yeah,
weight
these...
relief none. Ouch.
But
the thing about that we had when we worked at GAC, we had one of these, not the Slash one. Obviously, it was a. I had it in my head it was a 1265. I don't know if that's different. I could be wrong, but it was a white Gibson SG double neck 18 string, so very similar to this. Is there a 1265? No, maybe not. Maybe it was 1275. And the thing is with them is we had it for, oh, I don't know, 3 years or something. We had it pride of place. It was in the middle of the Gibson wall. It was the first guitar that you saw when you walked in, and it sat there for about 3 years. And people came in and went, bloody hell, look at that. That looks cool. Don't need it. And then one day someone just walked in and went, oh my God, you've got one. You've got one. I'll take it. And it's just like, that's the thing with those, is that they are very, very esoteric guitars, but the people who need them like are desperate for them. So I think these will be very popular, and they will go even at that price. You know, it's kind of got that mixture of it being a kind of a guitar hero guitar. And also, you know, there are people out there who do still, you know, rock the double neck. So,
well, double necks are kind of talk of the town at the moment, because there was that the picture that recently got posted by Fender of their. Did you see this, Jay? Their master built,
yeah. So it was a
double neck Strat.
Yeah, master built double neck. So there was it was a Strat on one end and a bass six on the lower guitar was a bass six, and
but the bass six was in a Strat format rather than looking like a, you know, a jazz master.
Yes, yeah, well, it would have been a bit weird if it had been a full kind of bass six on the bottom and a Strat on the top. I mean, maybe maybe it would have been cool, but you know, that was a very, very cool. So there's been a, like, the Fender, the master builders seem to be kind of like worth their weight in gold at the moment, because they've all got Instagram accounts and they're all just putting up all of their kind of cool guitars themselves. And I mean, I absolutely love it, just looking at some of the mad stuff that they're putting together. I mean, was the lower half of it Carlos Lopez? I think it was.
That's right. It was. Yes. It was. I can't remember what they said, but it was a joint project.
Yes.
Between
so
two
it was Dennis Galushka did the Strat, did the top half, and then Carlos Lopez did the bass six, I think. So Carlos Lopez has been doing a lot of kind of baritones and stuff. So he has got a guitar that he's kind of made, kind of off his own back, you know, it's his own shape, and I'm trying to remember what it's called. The Brawler, that's what it is. The Brawler baritone is a guitar that he has kind of put together, and it's very, very cool. It's kind of a Strat. I guess it is kind of a Strat Jazzmaster hybrid in terms of the body shape, but it's double humbucker. I think they're usually Curtis Novak pickups, and then kind of a Strat trem and just master volume, master tone. And he has made a load of those, and they just look absolutely fan-bloody-tastic.
Yeah, this sounds right on my street. Yeah. I need to.
So I guess maybe kind of he is kind of the go-to master builder when it comes to doing something that's, you know, extended, not extended range, but like, you know, lower tuning. So yeah, the fact that it's a collaboration between him and Dennis Galushka is very cool.
Very cool. I tell you what, I'm really into the Strat being stretched out like that and made into the basics. I love the look of the like the pickup placement with the amount of distance that it has between, you know, each pickup. I think, like, just I want a Strat bass six.
Yeah.
just on its own, I would be so into that. Like, you know, you think that's the bass six is, you know, a Jaguar just stretched. I want a Strat just stretched. Maybe there should be a whole range, because then you could have a stretch telly and a Strat. Oof. And I'm into all of these things.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that I think is cool about this is it's kind of Fender going back to doing what the custom shop was doing originally, which is just like mad stuff. Whereas what has kind of become popular is the Time Machine stuff. So, you know, the kind of, oh, I want a 66 Strat and I want it to look exactly like it did in this weird year that nobody cares about. Or like, you know, 67 telly or what, you know, whatever. And at that, alongside your classic 56s and 62s and all that. So I think just having the option to do this mad stuff is just very, very cool. I'm really into it.
Yeah, yeah, they look absolutely incredible. Anyway, that pretty much brings us up to time on the regular episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. We're going to be continuing over on our Patreon exclusive episode, where from as little as $1 a month you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. $1 a month gets you the regular episode ad-free and early. $5 a month gets you the Patreon episode and loads of other bonus bits. And $10 a month makes you one of our executive producers and gets your name sung in this new series of songs that are being played as the exit music for the podcast. Although I'll be honest, I don't know if I'm ever going to top last week's song. I thought it was me firing on absolutely all cylinders. if you didn't hear it, I advise just going back and just you know, moving it forward to the last sort of minute and a half. It might have even been 2 minutes. I honestly sort of just got lost in the moment in the end. But listen.
I've seen you've been getting a lot of praise for your little sing songs, Joe. I've got to be honest.
It was really good. I spent a day sort of working on like the auto-tuned backing vocal sections for it. It was very good.
Oh, good. It sounds like a great use of your time, I've got to be honest.
Yep. Yes, sir. I think it was effective.
You realised what you were saying halfway through that sentence, didn't you? You tried to pull back.
Anyway, you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Guitar Nerds, and you can join us on Facebook on facebook.com/groups/GuitarNerdsForum, or watch our videos on YouTube by searching for Guitar Nerds. Emily, why don't you tell everyone where they can check out the Get Offset podcast?
Wherever fine podcasts are found, Joe. We're on iTunes, getoffsetpodcast.com. We're on Patreon for $25. I will write you a song.
That sounds like a fantastic way around me having to write any more of our Patreon songs, actually.
Yeah, I didn't say it was going to be a good song, but I guess you didn't either. We're on Facebook. Get Offset Podcast is our Facebook group, which I recommend joining. I do a visual thread for every episode that we do, which is quite time consuming. I have to put it on 2x just to do it in a timely manner.
Well, I'm never going to do anything as complicated as that on our group. But just listeners, if you get any ideas about that, that's not happening for us. Anyway, thanks very much for coming on the episode.
We've had a great time.
Obviously, listeners, if you're part of the Patreon, you'll get to hear us talking about more stuff over there now. And we'll see you next week for more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Cheers, gang.
I want to see your hands. Gary Pitillo, Mark Izzo, Kadawaki, Robert Basto, Stephen Burke, Robert Butterworth, Neil Newton, Marion Peter Stewart Robson, Jeffrey Weiss, Chris Gillian Hansen, John Listen, Zach Melton, Keith Adams, Steve Ferguson, Paul Eric File, Andy Joyce, John Anglin, Adam Royce, Chris J. Kummer, Rob Gruel, Scott Hamilton, Tucker Amadon, Nanny Cooper, Ross Edwards, Nate Aker, Stephen Hedrop, Grant, Matt Roberts, Dave Lee, Emery, James Baker, Juan Correa, Aaron Sherman, Blake Wyland, Andrew Good, Jamie Kemp, Jake Gray, Matt Bellamy, Martin Cliff, Scott Kennedy, Christopher Lowe, Seth Hans Ams, Robin Smith, Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Rob Nordwick, Duncan Watson, Ed Bentley, Stephen Michael, Carlos Manja, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Brad Toms, Scott O'Brien, Laurie Anstis, Paul Corrigan, Will Clare, Moore Gravis, Phil Thompson, Adrian Day, Ken Stays, Matthew King, Scott Kane, John Novo, Christopher Wolf, and Corbett Sue.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.